Yes, we've been talking about the end of the book of John. In John, the 20th chapter, Jesus is recorded as coming to the apostles after he had been raised, and they were given an opportunity to put their finger into the nail holes in his hands, to put their finger into his side that had been pierced. Not only had they seen all the great miracles that Jesus had done, remember, they'd been with him throughout his personal ministry. They got to see him raised from the dead. And that's a fascinating thing, to think about what it would be like to see the resurrected Jesus. I was thinking about that as we were singing the song with James this morning. You know, I, as much as I would like to have been there and seen Jesus, it's scary to think what my reaction might have been if I had been at the crucifixion. I might have been one who was jeering along with the rest of the crowd, and that's scary. So let's think a little bit this morning about the unseen Jesus and how not seeing him calls us to a response. John, the 20th chapter, at verse 6, John says, though you have not seen him, you love him. Though you do not see him now, you believe in him. What a great blessing it is to be able to believe in Jesus. I'm sorry, that was 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and that's verse 8. Brought down to verse 15 in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, he says, he who has called you is holy, you also be holy in all of your conduct, since it is written, you should be holy, for I am holy. An unseen Jesus calls us for a response to him. Our response should be our holiness as we try to imitate God. Now, it's true, I haven't seen Jesus. None of us have. The Apostle Paul was one who was born out of due season. He was chosen to be an apostle, and so he had to witness the resurrected Jesus, and Jesus took the opportunity to appear to him on the road to Damascus so that Paul could say, I'm a witness of Jesus as a resurrected person. That was what was necessary for him to be an apostle. Now, I can't expect that. I've not seen Jesus. The question is, what does my belief rest on? Now, I was talking with someone about this very idea, and they said, yes, Jesus is unseen. I have not seen him, but I have seen those people that follow him, and I want to be like them. And the more I think about that, the more I began to understand that we're not trying to build a faith in us. We're trying to build a faith in Jesus, who is unseen. If your faith rests in what you see in me, unfortunately, you'll have a human faith. But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus showed us God. And that's what Peter said, right? Be holy, for I am holy. It's not be holy because Dylan is holy. He is holy, but he's holy because God is holy. So our goal is not to create people who have faith in us. Our goal is to create faith in God. Our belief always rests on the trustworthiness of the witnesses who write about God. It doesn't rest on them, but it rests on their trustworthiness. The question is, are the witnesses who wrote to us about God, about a resurrected Lord, trustworthy people? Can we believe what they said? Now, it's true that there were people who used religion for personal gain. But we have to accept that. Unfortunately, it continues today. There's still people that use religion for personal gain. But did the writers who told us about Jesus ever do that? There were temple money changers. John, the second chapter, we saw Jesus encountering those that were using religion for personal financial gain. There were some who were covetous teachers. Second Peter, the second chapter, Peter says that there are people who seek nothing more than to make merchandise of you. Don't trust those people. I wouldn't trust those people to tell me about Jesus, because they're just covetous. They're doing what they do, using me as a means of personal gain. There are warnings about bad elders and deacons who are, in essence, greedy of dishonest gain. The King James translation says they're greedy of filthy lucre. That's not a kind of word that we use very often, but dishonest gain, I can understand that. There are people who wrongfully accuse Paul. He took no money from the people to whom he preached in Corinth, and they accused him nonetheless. Now, some of them, if you read through 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, some of them even had this twisted way of accusing him of being a preacher who was nothing more than somewhat looking for dishonest financial gain. He says, he didn't take any money from us. He must somehow be trying to use us. So even when the Apostle Paul supported himself to preach in Corinth, refusing to take any money from them, they misunderstood what he was doing. They twisted it. So don't be too quick to judge someone who says that I need to be supported so I can preach. You know, I think when I reflect on people who do what they do for personal gain, I think about the Apostle Paul, the man that wrote probably 2/3, if not a little bit more than that, of the entire New Testament. And I think, was he writing about Jesus to secure personal financial gain for himself. Well, what was his status like financially, personally, before he became a Christian? He describes it in 2 Corinthians. You know, he was one of the youngest members of the Sanhedrin. That's like being the youngest judge on the Supreme Court of the United States. That's no mean feat. He was born to a wealthy family. He was well respected. When Peter became a follower of Jesus, he didn't increase his wealth. In fact, he says sometime later, he gave up everything. He said, I count everything but loss for Jesus. And it's not just Paul saying, well, I don't value money anymore. He really did give it up. Can I trust the people that told me about Jesus? Did they do it for nothing more than religious, the personal financial gain? I just can't see that. Well, did they write for personal fame? Did they tell me about Jesus because it's going to give them some recognition? It's right. There were deceivers who did seek personal acclaim from religion. There were people that abused the story that they told about Jesus. We read about it in Matthew 6. The Pharisees that loved to pray standing in the streets, and they wanted so much recognition that they would make long prayers. And everybody would say, oh, what a great rabbi that is. Whenever they did good deeds, they would ring a bell so that everybody knew what they were doing. They were seeking personal fame. Can I trust that person to tell me about Jesus? 3 John. I labeled it 3 John, the first chapter, verse 9. Well, that's real easy because 3 John just has one chapter. But if I put 3 John 9, it looks like it's 3 John, the 9th chapter. So that's why it appears that way on the screen. Who's discussed in 3 John, the 9th verse? A fellow named Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence among them. He's writing to the church, and he says, Diotrephes is this person that he just really wants personal fame. So much that if you threaten his personal fame, he'll put you out of the church. Acts, the 20th chapter. The Apostle Paul warned the Ephesian elders. He said, there were some among them that would seek to draw men away after them. They're just looking for personal gain. You know, interestingly, the Bible only records the death of one of the apostles, James. It's in Acts, the 12th chapter. He was killed by the sword. All of the rest of the people who wrote the New Testament died without even a footnote in history. Secular history tells us stories about how they died. And you can read Fox's Book of Martyrs and Some of those accounts may be true. Some of them aren't. I can't tell you which is true and which is not. But for the most part, the people that told other people about Jesus, the people that wrote the New Testament, they got no personal fame out of what they did. And again, I think about the Apostle Paul. A man, as I said, who wrote two-thirds of the New Testament. He knew what personal fame was. He had earned a lot of personal fame. He was considered a great rabbi. Then he becomes a Christian. And people say, well, his bodily presence is weak and contemptible. He writes good letters, but his bodily presence. And I can understand that. Think about the things that Paul had gone through. Shipwreck, he'd been stoned, he'd been beaten with rods. All the things that he went through, he didn't enjoy any personal fame. When you think about that unseen Jesus, and you understand that you're going to have to believe in him because of the testimony of people that are worthy of you giving them some credence, you know, that's going to mean a lot. So what do I take away from this? It's true that the Bible has been misused in the service of oppression, in the service of self-aggrandizement, just building somebody up. But never forget, it doesn't mean that the Bible was written for that purpose. Don't confuse misuse with purpose. We all know what a screwdriver is, right?
Yeah.
Screwdriver, useful tool. It was built for a purpose to drive screws. And I'm glad that I have one that has a motor on the end of it. Have screwdrivers ever been misused to kill people? Well, sure they have. But it would be the grossest of errors to acknowledge misuse and then confuse that with purpose. Just as it's the grossest of errors to acknowledge that the Bible has been used for unholy purposes and then assume that that's the reason that the Bible was written. It's not. John, the 20th chapter, verses 30 and 31. A lot of things were done by Jesus that are not written in this book, he says. But these are written so that you will believe. The reason that these are written down is so you will believe. Nietzsche argued that the Bible represented a morality of the oppressed and that it was written by those who held authority in the culture. And that notion has been repeated so many times that people assume that that's the case. But you know it's not. Look at the people that wrote the Bible. It was written exclusively by marginalized people, not by the wealthy, not by people who were trying to keep other people down, but it was written by marginalized people who were suffering under the harsh conditions that had been imposed by a brutal empire, and they never wrote a call to arms. They never said, rise up and defeat these brutal beasts that just want to destroy you. It was written to give marginalized people a reason for hope in a just living God. Number one, don't confuse misuse with purpose. Number two, remember who wrote the Bible. And number three, remember that the Bible is still here. The Roman Empire is gone. They had the authority. And they're no more. That's always been true. It's not just true of the Roman Empire. It's true of any oppressor. They'll hold power for a while, but their power will vanish. The Bible is still here. Can you trust it? Was it written by trustworthy people? Absolutely. Is it written so you'll have faith in John as a trustworthy person? No. It's written so you'll have faith in Jesus and so that you will be holy as God is holy. What a tremendous book. What a tremendous Savior. What a tremendous call. If that's what you want, then we want to help you to find it. Put on Jesus in baptism. Turn away from the wandering, lost life that you've been living. Confess before men, this is my God. We're baptizing you today. And if you've begun to do that and you kind of lost track and you wandered off again, then return.